Chapter 6. Networking. If you ask almost any employment expert, including those who specialize in the legal profession and those with a more general focus, they will tell you that networking is the name of the game. In fact, think of networking as a permanent strategy for career building, not just a tactic you dust off when you're job hunting. It's possible to have a successful career as a patent agent or patent attorney without networking, but you're more likely to experience success. And if you're successful, you could be even more successful if you devote some energy to networking. People you meet while you're networking can potentially help you get a job after you meet with them, but they can also potentially help you get your next job, or the one after that, or send business your way throughout your career, or provide any of a vast number of other benefits. There are two schools of thought about networking. One focuses on existing contacts in all areas of your life: friends, family, colleagues, people with similar hobbies, members of organizations you belong to, and other acquaintances. Brainstorm and identify networking targets from there. The other school of thought focuses on nurturing professional contacts, including developing relationships with people you already know, as well as creating new contacts. The former approach is more useful for people with more loosely defined job hunting goals than the kind you have. Since you're interested in a very specific career field, the more professional route is generally better. On the other hand, you probably have a lot of existing professional contacts, some of whom may not come to mind immediately. The longer you are in the field of patent law, the more your networking will become a hybrid of the more personal and more professional approaches. Even if the personal network approach, in its most narrowly defined form, is not the primary approach you take, keep elements of it in mind during your job search. Most importantly, you never know who is in a position to help you out. You likely have a whole web of contacts, and they all have their own webs of contacts. People you know who seem to have nothing to do with patent law could be a direct, but as yet undiscovered, line between you and the person who can hire you for your dream job. That observation generates several implications. If you never know who is in a position to help you out, build your network by reciprocating in advance. People are capable of remarkable generosity, and if you treat others with generosity, they will want to help you out when they're in a position to do so. It's useful to put yourself in a frame of mind where you're always networking. A lot of networking can be done when you barely know you're doing it. In fact, you probably have lots of conversations that could be networking if you did a minimal amount of prep ahead of time, hence the scripts covered earlier as a part of the resource portfolio. Imagine the missed opportunities in your daily life and try to close those gaps. Along the same lines, if you're always networking, you should always be on your best behavior. While you certainly don't have to wear an interview suit everywhere you go, you should always look your best. If those two ideas fill you with trepidation, for example, if you're someone whose overall quality of life depends on spending the majority of your weekends in pajamas or clothes that approximate pajamas, tell yourself that you will upgrade your look for the duration of your job search, or that you'll just step up your appearance-related efforts by a degree or two. A very basic networking practice among your personal network is to decide that you will take every opportunity to make sure that everyone you know is aware of your situation. When people ask how you're doing, tell them that a major part of your life is that you're making the transition into patent law. You just passed the patent bar, or whatever information is appropriate. After all, it's true. A career transition is a big deal. So it is the answer to the question of, what's up? And they did ask how you were doing. Don't bend their ear about it for half an hour unless they're clearly trying to learn more from you. Tell them what's up and then move on. If they have a connection or something else to offer, they'll mention it, either right then or later. Finally, an even more basic idea. If you have business cards, keep a stack of them on you at all times. Don't be stingy with them. Whip them out at the slightest provocation. You shouldn't feel as though you're tossing them around like rice at a wedding or birdseed, but you should pass them around to people more often than you think you should. Give your best friends and closest family members 5 to keep in their wallets. They will be happy to network on your behalf if they run into appropriate people. The same is true for any colleagues, former supervisors, teachers, or other professional contacts who are especially invested in your success. Now, on to what is for many people a harder way to network, working your existing professional contacts and creating new ones. Remember, though, that networking is central to your success throughout your career. Think of it as an ongoing process that you may as well start before you have a job. It may help you to think of it as making friends as opposed to the more clinical-sounding contacts. Although in networking terms, a contact does refer to a long-term relationship. In more general usage, the word connotes a single encounter, which is not what you are doing. A better word might be connections. That is what you should be creating. Maybe you will never share with them the intimate details of your life, but in other ways, you're there to connect with them, create a relationship of mutual support and information sharing, and enjoy each other's company. The first thing you need to do is gather contacts. If you have already spent some time in the patent law field or otherwise have plenty of existing contacts, you're in great shape. If you don't have contacts, or if you do have contacts but want more or better ones, you need to find ways to get some. There are three main ways to do this. Number one, dig deeper in your search for contacts. Number two, get involved with groups and meetings. And number three, cold call people in your field. Number one, dig deeper in your search for contacts. Even if you don't think you have any contacts in patent law, the technical background you acquired in order to take the patent bar has probably given you at least a couple of direct or indirect contacts. Think about it. People you came into contact with worked in labs, did research and/or development of ideas and objects, and at some point there was bound to be some patentable activity. At the very least, one of these people knew someone else who was doing patentable activity. You have contacts from college and possibly from graduate school or law school as well. Academic institutions, even high schools, tend to produce powerful loyalties, and some people you didn't expect to help you will bend over backward just because you share experience at the same school, or even because you share experience at a school someone close to them attended. Of course, your initial contacts include fellow students and professors. In addition to people who remember you from your time at school, academic institutions often have data banks of alumni. Search those for people in patent law specifically, or in the legal profession more generally. For example, if you got your bachelor's degree in engineering, talk to former professors and students you knew. Don't limit yourself to people you've kept in touch with. It's fine to dig up old acquaintances. And look in your alma mater's alumni database or contact their career center. You can even look up the technology transfer people at your school or schools, telling them that you're alum and asking them for contacts. Ask all of these people to help you find patent law contacts or even more engineering contacts. Since most people interested in patent law didn't know about that possibility, or if they did, didn't pursue it as an undergraduate, you probably also have work experience in engineering, or whatever your technical field is. Brainstorm all of your contacts from your prior work experience. Don't think only of your immediate colleagues. Widen your scope to those who contracted with your former employer, members of other organizations you interacted with, or people at that organization whom you didn't know, but who did patent-related work. Of course, if you went to or are currently in law school, you will have all sorts of legal connections. Obviously, anyone with an intellectual property background is a valuable contact, but so is anyone in the legal profession. They are likely to know many other people, including people in the IP field in general and patent law in particular. Even if you never went to law school, go back through your personal network. The legal field is big enough that you must know someone in it, and even if you don't know anyone in the legal field, someone you know does. Number two, get involved with groups and meetings. What constitutes professional organizations and meetings can vary enormously. Among them are events featuring famous or not-so-famous speakers open to the public or members only, national, regional, and local meetings, bar associations, IP law organizations, patent law organizations, and patent law organizations specifically for people with certain specialties. There are also technical organizations, groups of legal professionals with shared non-professional interests, like people who play on sports teams together, or interests that can be broadly understood as legal but don't necessarily reflect the members' fields. For example, animal rights or anti-domestic violence groups. What's available to you locally will depend on the size of the relevant communities. research different networking possibilities in your area. You can find them through online research, through existing contacts, periodicals, and newsletters, even possibly in the reference section of your local public library. Choose groups that interest you. Don't join a tenant rights advocacy group just because you think you can network there. If you can't tell whether a certain group or event is open to you, call a contact person, explain your situation, and ask them point blank whether it's appropriate for you to attend. If you do so, though, be in your networking frame of mind when you make the phone call. Make sure that the person doesn't feel pressured to pretend that you'd be welcome and be prepared to switch gears immediately, turning the person you called into a contact, if that seems appropriate. While it's okay to shop around for a professional organization, once you find one, two, or three, stick with them. It's better to develop depth and familiarity with a couple of groups than to show up all over the place and never dig in. People notice when someone makes a commitment and demonstrates consistency, which are good qualities in an employee. If you go to professional organization meetings, don't pressure yourself too much to start schmoozing everyone or immediately. Especially if you're shy, that could create an avoidance dynamic where you end up not going at all. Just tell yourself that at each meeting, you'll talk to one person you don't know. Sometimes you don't even have to talk with anyone. A good way to trick yourself into talking with more than one person is to talk to one person early on in the process, to get it out of the way. Sometimes doing so relaxes you enough that it's easy to have more conversations. Professional and semi-professional organizations can be tremendous support systems, or they can be hotel ballroom-sized pressure cookers. While the pressure cooker variety may be part of your overall career-building strategy, now may be the time to focus on the support system variety. Sure, you need to be networking now, but if you feel your self-esteem deflating like a punctured balloon, back out of that situation as gracefully as possible. And don't go back, at least until you have a job you like. Of course, if pressure cookers get you fired up in a good way, by all means, use them for networking. One terrific opportunity to make a contact can occur if someone in patent law gives a talk. You can attend the talk and approach the person and or call them afterward. Even if the person doesn't know you from Adam, calling someone and telling them that you attended their talk, were really impressed, and would like to take them to lunch to discuss their thoughts on the patent law field works really well. You have created a situation where you have a great excuse for calling them, and you've begun the relationship by flattering them, which is always a good opening note. Finally, you can also get involved by making yourself visible. Find situations where you could be a speaker or write articles for a local publication. Volunteer in a capacity where you might run into people in patent law or in the legal profession. If you have a lot to say, keep a blog and publicize it, perhaps even including the URL on your business card. Number 3. Cold call people in your field. Whether you truly have no other contacts, or there are just people you'd really like to meet but haven't found a path to through your contacts, it is okay to call or email people out of the blue. While the idea of cold calling people, that is, calling people for whom you have no in other than shared professional interests, is horrifying to some people, it's not nearly as scary as it might seem. For starters, if you are far enough down the road toward a patent law career that you're reading this book and learning for work, you already have something relevant in common with other patent law professionals. Bear in mind, always, that networking is about mutuality and reciprocity, not just a one-way helpline. Therefore, other patent law professionals have an interest in connecting with you as much as you want to connect with them. Just call or email, tell the person that you're a new patent law professional, and invite them for coffee or lunch to talk about the state of the profession in your area. Meeting with contacts. Once you have found a good contact, what should you do? The suggestions below include how to prepare ahead of time, as well as what to talk about when you're meeting with them. A note. Although these recommendations use terms like firm and employer, that does not necessarily mean that the advice is limited to contacts in law firms or to contacts who are interesting because of their employer. In the former case, you may be looking for a job that's not with a law firm. In the latter, you might be pursuing a contact not because of where they work, but because of their position in a professional organization or some other activity they engage in that's not, strictly speaking, their job. Before the meeting. Do your research on the contact and her or his employer ahead of time. Look online at the firm's website to learn about them and relevant news items. Using a search engine, look up the contact, as well as the employer and any other relevant organizations, bar associations, etc., in which the person is active. Try to find points of possible connection with the contact, whether it's a mutual friend, their school, shared interests, or experience. You should be able to demonstrate that you have taken the time to learn about the person and the organization they work for before meeting with that person. There are three reasons for doing this. 1, it will impress the contact that you have done your homework. 2, it will give you ideas about conversation or bonding topics. And 3, it will help generate ways to follow up with that person, both to reinforce your meeting and to give something back to them for their time with you. However, don't go overboard with the personal information you find. You don't want to come across like a stalker. On a more professional level, many people don't actually know what's publicly available about them or their firm, and if you have researched very thoroughly, you might not ask the obvious questions. Sure, that might be because you know the answer already, but they won't necessarily know that. In fact, it's possible to do so much research that you don't feel very curious about the person anymore. Since the main resource you have to offer is your interest and curiosity, that's not the position you want to be in. You need to strike a balance between showing that you aren't coming into the meeting cold, you've been courteous enough to do your homework, and being so overprepared that it hinders, rather than helps, the conversational and discovery-oriented aspects of the meeting. Prepare relevant documents. Bring several copies of your resume, several business cards, and any notes you'd like to take with you. See the next item in this list. Also, make sure you have a nice-looking notepad on which you can take notes and a pen. Decide what you're going to ask the person. Don't be afraid to prepare a script. Not to read during the meeting, please, but to allow yourself to picture the details of how you might raise issues. Here are some ideas for questions you can ask. How did you get into patent law? What do you like and dislike about it? What do you think is particular to the patent law culture in this area, city, state, or region? Related, more specific questions, is it growing or shrinking? How has it changed since you began practicing? Is it dominated by a few groups or scattered around many? Is it primarily housed in law firms, or is there a lot of in-house, government, or higher education activity? What areas of specialization are in high or not so high demand? What's your firm like? This is a touchier question than it may appear to be. On one hand, your contact may think you want to gossip about their particular workplace. On the other hand, they may think you're about to ask for a job. So tread carefully. Consider asking more specific versions of this question that seem less threatening, and don't hesitate to skip it altogether. Your contact is likely to discuss their workplace without you having to bring it up. Who do you see as the big names in this area? That can include the prominent people, law firms, companies, etc. What do you or your firm or organization look for when you're hiring a patent agent or attorney? If you were an entry-level patent agent or attorney, how would you go about finding employment? Do you have suggestions about firms that often hire people in my position? If you get to a point where you feel comfortable showing the person your resume, given my background, what do you see as my strengths and weaknesses? Do you have any suggestions for specific approaches I should take? Do you have suggestions for things I could do to strengthen my candidacy for jobs? Do you have suggestions on how I can improve my resume? Do you have any suggestions for professional organizations or publications that I should look into? Do you have any suggestions for other people I should contact? Do you have their contact info? Would you mind if I told them that you suggested their name? During the meeting, begin by introducing yourself. You can use some of the positioning statement material you have developed. Then ask questions. You can bring a list, but it's more important to be conversational than to ask specific questions. It's better to leave with unanswered questions, even those you really, really want the answer to, than to ruin a dynamic that's working really well. Don't forget, if you make a good connection with this person, you'll see them again. They can answer your questions later. You have three goals: to learn more about them, to learn more about the contours of the field in the area, and to generate leads for more contacts. Be yourself. Make a good impression. But don't treat your interaction like a job interview. This is a friendly, professional conversation. If they ask you what positions you are looking for, Try to be broad so that you don't eliminate possible opportunities, but not so broad that you seem passive about where you're going. For example, if you say you're looking for work at a smaller firm, you have effectively eliminated that person as a contact for large firm work. On the other hand, you don't want it to sound like you're going to take whatever you can get. Pick your top one, two, or three priorities and allow yourself to mention them. If you really wouldn't work at a large firm, you can say you are most interested in small firm work. Know that the contact will simultaneously want you to indicate some kind of preference landscape and take whatever you put into that landscape very seriously. Be enthusiastic and interested. Listen, listen, listen. Listening is the skill most underrated by those in a position to listen and most appreciated by those who have something to say. Use open body language that shows you're listening. Ask follow-up questions to show that you're listening. Bearing in mind the earlier point about being generous in advance, listen carefully during these meetings for possible opportunities to give something back to the contact. Don't hesitate to let the conversation diverge completely from your networking agenda. For example, if your contact suddenly wants to talk about their child's difficulties in school, see this as an opportunity for two things. One, on-the-spot bonding, and two, a possible way for you to be generous, both by lending your ear at the time and when you follow up with the person. Avoid doing anything that can be construed as asking for a job. Some networking advice manuals suggest that you broach the subject directly or obliquely, but most legal professionals are touchier about that possibility than people in other fields. If the contact raises the issue, go ahead and discuss it, but follow the person's lead. If the subject comes up, you may be so excited or relieved to address the topic of your long-term goal that you'll take it further than it was intended to go. That will put both of you in an uncomfortable position. Try defusing the topic by being enthusiastic about job possibilities, but also being clear that it was not your primary purpose. Feel free to write down any specific information the contact gives you. Don't take notes all the time, and definitely don't bury your head in your notebook. You don't want to disrupt the flow of the conversation or make the person feel like they're in a lecture hall and you're preparing for the test. If you want to produce an overall record of the conversation, which is a good idea, write down everything you remember after the meeting is over. Do so ASAP, though, before you forget the details. Give the person your business card and, if it seems appropriate, your resume. Ask for the contact's business card, too. Obviously, you know how to contact the person already, but even if you don't ever look at the card again, it's still an important gesture of reciprocity. If any money is spent during the meeting for coffee, lunch, whatever, it must be your treat. After the meeting, write down notes about the conversation while it's still fresh in your mind. Send a thank you note. This is a somewhat controversial subject. Some people say that you should always write a thank you note, and you should do it immediately. One of the mantras in the classic career guide, What Color Is Your Parachute?, is to send out a thank you note to every single person who helps you in any way at any stage of the career building process, whether they provide you with a conversation, a favor, a contact, or anything else. They also say that you should do it that very day or the next day, but no later. The logic of that argument is that it gives you an additional opportunity to pitch yourself, to be noticed and appreciated through the content of the note or simply for sending the note, and that it's simply polite and portrays you as a courteous individual. Others say that, particularly in certain professions, including law, thank you notes are more harmful than helpful. They can be perceived as hokey and frivolous. They're another chance to put your foot in your mouth. They imply that the sender is inferior to the recipient, and so on. However, at the networking stage, it is appropriate to send a thank you note. Given its controversial status, however, you may want to thank the person via email, a less formal medium than breaking out your stationery. See the next point below, however, before sending anything. Consider what you can give back to this person. A really great way to be generous is to send the person information, for example, an article or link to a website you came across that they might be interested in. Using the example of the contact who wanted to talk about their child's difficulties in school, try to think of someone you know who is familiar with that issue. Ask that person to recommend an article or website to send to the contact, or, if it's appropriate, you can put the contact in touch with that person. If you have something to give back to the contact within 24 hours of the meeting, send it with the thank you note. If you have a hard copy of an article, feel free to send a hard copy thank you note. If the information is email accessible, use email. It provides a great piggyback to, or excuse for, the thank you note. Plan to meet the person again. Be very sensitive to the person's busyness. Although it may seem appropriate to meet with someone once a month, that is really a very short time, and you may be imposing too much if you suggest meeting that often. Depending upon how crazy the contact's life is, every 3 to 6 months is a good amount of time. For some people, every year is often enough to touch base and stay on their radar. Basically, you want to nurture the connection enough to keep it active and alive so you can turn to the contact, or vice versa, but not so much that you are imposing. Also remember that once you have a job, meeting too often may impose on you. In general, you should develop a well-organized system for recording and following up after every networking meeting. If you thought you wouldn't need your calendar or PDA because you're between jobs, you're wrong. In addition to noting meetings with contacts, it's a good idea to set aside and schedule in your calendar additional time immediately after the meeting for note-taking, researching your give-back ideas, writing thank you notes, etc. It's also useful to schedule a time to contact the person to set up another meeting. Using the guidelines in the previous bulleted item, put schedule meeting with X in your calendar at a date a couple of months away. And don't forget to organize your physical files to reflect your networking meeting. Finally, follow up with any of the suggestions your contact made during the meeting. That might include additional networking contacts, other resources to check out, strengthening your resume, or other tasks. Networking is one of the aspects of job hunting that people find most daunting, but it doesn't have to be. There are so many ways to tailor your networking efforts to your own personality that you should be able to make it fun, or at least enjoyable and rewarding. Take the plunge and allow yourself to go with the flow. After you have taken all of the steps suggested so far in this book, you are going to have a job offer, and it's very likely that you'll have more than one. In an ideal world, you'll get all of your job offers at the same time, so you'll be able to weigh the pros and cons of each against each other. That probably won't happen, though. You'll probably have one or perhaps two job offers at a time. How do you decide whether to accept a particular job offer, and what steps should you take before accepting? That's the topic of our final chapter.